Okay, Mark Weber, our guest from the Institute for Historical Review, are you there?
Yes, I am, Jim. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. Now, last half hour we talked about the unjust tasering of Christopher Boland, the investigative reporter out of Schaumburg, Illinois, for his exposures on a lot of things about 911. This half hour we're talking with you. You and, I guess, Lady Renouf in England, a few other people, are the foremost experts on the three guys sitting in jail in Europe. Ernst Zundel, who was grabbed in Tennessee a few years ago, Gemar Rudolph, who was grabbed in Chicago last December 2005, and David Irving, the foremost English historian of the past half century, probably, who is sitting in jail in Austria, all for speeches or writings they did disagreeing with the Hollywood version of the Holocaust. Now, Mark, let me set up as we did when we had you on a year ago real quickly. I want people to understand, because they don't want to be supporting anything that's wrong or getting tight, pulled into something that's wrong. I'm just an average American. When I went to high school and grade school, high school in the late 60s, I had the impression that gas chambers in Germany during World War II were about as common as a McDonald's restaurants were in America. And I had this, not realizing that I was growing up, especially in Cincinnati, amongst the Germanic peoples, people descended from the Germanic peoples, who in so many ways keep our society going technologically and every other way, really good people. I thought the Germans were walking around in Germany rubbing their hands and saying, boy, we got them now. Smell that flesh burning, we got them now. That was my impression. In 1986, when Ernst Zundel, who's one of the guys they finally got in jail, had a court trial, and he basically prevailed in that court trial, proving with forensic evidence that the gas chamber story at Auschwitz was a lie, they had the foremost expert for the Jewish lobby, Raul Hilberg, on the stand, and under the questioning of lawyer Doug Christie, he admitted under oath there were no gas chambers in Germany during World War II. He said they were all in Poland. Well, when I heard that he had said under oath there were no gas chambers in Germany during World War II, I said to myself, oh, wait a minute. Wait just a doggone minute. This is not what we were given the impression in grade school. Then I found out other stories we heard in the 60s and 70s, that the Nazis were making Jews into human soap, that everyone admits that's false, that the Nazis were making Jews into lampshades, which Michael Savage, the talk show host on 300 stations, still repeats, that is false. Then I heard that Auschwitz had 4 million, a plaque outside of Auschwitz about 10 years ago that said 4 million killed here, and then a few years ago, under pressure and historical research, they dropped that from 4 million to 1 million. So the point is, what in the heck is going on is what anyone should be wondering right now. And the big thing is they've grabbed these three men who did nothing but write and speak against this Hollywood version of the Holocaust, which is largely fictional, and they're in jail. And let me mention one more thing. I know Mark Weber and myself are against all the killing of unjust people. Even one person killed unjustly is infinitely wrong and infinite outrage to God, especially if that one person killed unjustly is you or me or someone listening here. So we're against that. And yes, there were Jews rounded up by the Nazis in World War II. There were many unjust killings. There was hundreds of thousands, at least, that died. The 6 million figure is probably an exaggeration. So we understand all that. And what the American soldiers saw when they liberated the camps, all the starving people and the dying and the dead people, they saw people who were starving and dying of typhus because all the food supply lines had been cut off. And for 28 years, Dr. Robert Farrison of France has asked the ADL and the Jewish lobby, draw us how a gas chamber worked or give us a description. How did it work that the German soldiers weren't killed, pulling tens of thousands of people in and out every day? So that's a setup, Mark, and now I'm going to pass the ball to you. What's going on with Ernst Zundel sitting in jail for 6 years or more, Irving sitting in jail in Austria for 6 years or whatever it is, and Gemar Rudolph sitting in jail for 6 years? Bring us up to date on these people.
Well, thank you, Jim. You've set up the situation very eloquently and very knowledgeably. The three men you mentioned, Ernst Zundel, David Irving, and Gemar Rudolph, are the three most prominent prisoners of conscience or political prisoners in Europe today. Now, Europeans have a record of being proud of their support for freedom of speech, but there's a glaring exception to that rule, and that is anyone who disputes this official Holocaust story in Europe can be, and many, many have been, imprisoned, fined, forced into exile for expressing their dissident views peacefully on this issue. Now, the three men you mentioned are significant not just because they're prominent, but they're in jail right now. They're in prison right now. Now, they're not alone. over the years, many, many others have been imprisoned and fined or forced into exile for expressing peacefully dissident views about this chapter of World War II. These are on the basis of these very bizarre so-called Holocaust denial laws that exist in Germany, in France, Switzerland, Austria, and several other European countries, which are make a mockery of European pretensions of support for freedom of speech and freedom of tolerance for dissident views.
Mark, can I interject one quickly here? I heard David Irving from jail on an interview with a British news agency that was on the Internet for a day or two. And Irving there said, I think his disagreement might have been as simple as this, at least one of them. He said, look, as a historian, keep in mind a man sitting in jail and he's on a phone interview. Then they banned his interviews. He said, as a historian, I don't want to be told I got to swallow the whole pie. I want to look at each thing and say, this makes sense, this doesn't make sense. One of the things he brought up, which is an absolute fact, I believe, that the buildings they're showing in Auschwitz to tourists today were built after World War II. And he objected to that. He said, don't show these buildings as if they are really historical when you build them after World War II.
Right. Several years ago, David Irving was fined by a German court for stating that the gas chamber shown at the Auschwitz main camp to tourists is a phony post-war reconstruction. The court fined him, punished him, and kept him out of the country on the basis of that statement, even though it's acknowledged, widely acknowledged, to be a true statement, because the Holocaust denial laws take effect and punish people even if the remarks they make are true. That's a really astonishing aspect of all of this, because the laws merely state that anyone who downplays or whitewashes the standard version of the Holocaust story in a way that is considered defamatory or harmful to the memory of the Jewish dead, those people can be punished even if the statement is true. And in that particular case, David Irving tried to call as a witness in his behalf the curator of the Auschwitz State Museum in Poland to certify that what he was saying was true, and that was denied. And that's typical also of these cases in which the evidence for the defense is often not allowed at all in these cases.
Didn't a Jewish investigator, a young man named David Cole, get them on video, and I think this is on the Internet too, at Auschwitz admitting the curators, admitting the buildings had been built since World War II?
Well, we have make available through our institute recordings on DVD and on tape of the famous interview by David Cole, young American, a Jewish American, with the curator at the Auschwitz State Museum archives, who admitted, contrary to what the guides tell the tourists, that the so-called gas chamber shown to tourists is a phony, it's a post-war reconstruction built under the communist regime.
And so this is at IHR.org, O-R-G, IHR.org?
Right, you can find this by contacting us through IHR.org, which is our website.
Yeah, now, and listen, folks, people listening in might be laying on the ground shell-shocked at this point if they've never heard this before. Let me tell you, this is not just we're out of information. We're going to talk for 20 minutes. We could talk for 5, 6, 20 hours on this, and if you go to IHR.org, especially look for the articles by Mark Weber, our guest, who are so reasoned, so eloquent, and you can get tons of information to see what's happening. Because the reason, and I'm going to try to let you go in a minute, but I know if people are hearing for this for the first time, I don't want them to be passing out, Mark. The reason for this state religion, Michael Hoffman II, another investigator who was at this trial of Ernst Zundel in 1986, I think, and wrote a book about it called The Great Holocaust Trial, he calls it the state religion of Holocaustianity. In other words, the reason for this, in my opinion, is that it is too. Right now we got this Zionist lobby that we talked about in the last hour on a sister station pushing us toward World War III in the Middle East, pushing us towards a police state at a home under the impetus of Michael Chertoff, the director of Homeland Security, who is an Israeli citizen and an American citizen. The purpose of this Holocaust and these Holocaust laws, which they're trying to bring to America, is to prevent anyone from criticizing the Zionist lobby into what they're doing to harm America now. In other words, if I say, hey, we don't like the fact that Michael Chertoff is bringing in police state laws like no one's going to be allowed to fly without government permission next year, which is true, then they're supposed to be able to yell Holocaust, and everybody's supposed to quit thinking and shut people like me up from raising questions. Don't you think that's the reason for these Holocaust laws?
Well, right. There are a couple of things. First, the entire Holocaust Remembrance Campaign did not emerge as some spontaneous expression of feeling or expression of historical interest. The Holocaust campaign exists as a result of a very long-term, dedicated, systematic campaign by major Zionist organizations like the Anti-Defamation League and the Simon Wiesenthal Center to make the Holocaust play this very important role in our society, which it does. That's why in Washington, D.C., we have an enormous U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum organized and run by a U.S. government agency to memorialize non-Americans who were victimized by other non-Americans. It's the only agency of its kind, the only museum of its kind in this country. But every major city in the United States has a comparable museum. And the Americans, if they know anything about history, they're told how many people, how many Jews died in World War II, even if they're utterly ignorant and kept utterly ignorant about how many people died in other countries or for whatever other reasons.
Or how many American soldiers died in World War
II. Or how many American soldiers died. That's one thing. The second point is that the Holocaust, these Holocaust denial laws themselves exist, and we have shown, and we will continue to emphasize this point, exist as a part of a systematic, organized, year-long campaign by major organizations, above all by the World Jewish Congress, to impose these laws in European countries. And these laws are have been introduced in these European countries to shut up dissenting voices because the Holocaust campaign serves Zionist interests. And that's why this campaign exists, and that's why these laws exist, and that's why these three men you mentioned are now sitting in prison as victims of these bizarre censorship laws.
And all they ever did was speak or write. They never hurt anybody. And so, in some cases, like David Irving, they just disagree with some of the tenets of the Holocaust official story. And I might add, I want to emphasize for people that are hearing this for the first time, we recognize there were millions of Jews rounded up or persecuted, and at least a few hundred thousand died. The 6 million number is not true. It is demonstrably false, and that's what Ernst Zundel, who's in jail in Germany, got in trouble for. But I look at World War II to some extent, and I can't get into this now because it's too detailed, as the everyday Jews, the everyday Germans, the everyday Poles in Europe being victimized by the international banking interest who funded Stalin and Hitler to some extent, and Churchill and Roosevelt. This whole thing, the average person of all ethnic backgrounds was caught in this thing, and we're not trying to minimize those Jews who did die unjustly, but we're trying to say that we can't let this small group of Zionist lobbies who controls our media mostly shut up criticism when we need to criticize them to stop them from dragging us into World War III in the Middle East and bringing a police state here at home. So, Mark, go ahead and maybe you could say something individually. Say whatever you want, but maybe you could say something individually about Gemmer Rudolph, Ernst Zundel, and David Irving, so people can get a little more familiar with the ordeal they're going through right now.
Right, thank you. Thank you, Jim. I mean, one of the important points about any form of historical inquiry is that historians have a right and have to be guaranteed the right to make mistakes. People make mistakes.
Yes.
Irving's views have changed over time in several ways, but that's what historians do. If every historian ever made a mistake about any important issue of history was locked up, we'd have virtually every major historian locked up or punished or fined in some way or the other.
Right, right.
The historical inquiry means also the right to express dissident views, even if uncomfortable ones.
Yes.
Now, in the Irving case, there's a particularly outrageous injustice because Irving was arrested in November of last year during a trip to Austria and was sentenced to 3 years in prison. 3 years in prison in February or earlier of this year for remarks he made 16 years earlier. 16 years earlier, if he had robbed a house, if he had stolen a car, the statute of limitations would have been over. But so great and so important is this Holocaust campaign and these laws, so important is the role that they play in Europe, that he was given a 3-year sentence for this. Now, this is unbelievable. And many, many people around the world, newspaper writers, editorialists, intellectuals, and so forth, spoke out strongly against this sentencing of Irving, particularly because it came in the aftermath of this tremendous argument in Europe and discussion in Europe about cartoons that Muslims find offensive. Mm-hmm. In Europe and in the United States, it's considered justifiable or at least permissible under the in the name of freedom of speech to say things that are considered offensive to Christians or to Muslims, but it's against the law to say things that Jews regard as offensive.
This is in Europe now.
This is in Europe, in these countries,
yeah.
have these laws.
Yeah.
This is a blatant double standard, and it is a gratifying thing, at least, that in this past year, more and more voices, prominent voices, have been speaking up against these hypocritical censorship laws.
Now, and incidentally, I want to note to everyone that your five TV networks, NBC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and Fox, well, they have unlimited time for Britney Spears' baby or Jessica Simpson's latest thing. They know, most people have never heard of David Irving, Ernst Zundel, and Gemar Rudolph, one of the most important free speech issues in our time. They've never even heard of it because of these vicious censors at these five TV networks who serve the Zionist interest.
Well, I would stress this point, that when people are locked up or punished for free expressions of their views in other countries, the media in this country and our political leaders are Johnny on the spot to criticize loudly and vociferously any restrictions of freedom of speech.
Right.
But these people, who aren't just fined or aren't just treated in some, aren't really punished, but put in prison for years, these blatant violations of a fundamental right are passed over in silence by our government. In fact, our government is complicit in the persecution of men such as Ernst Zundel and Gemar Rudolph.
Well, they grabbed Zundel in Tennessee a few years ago and Rudolph in Chicago 1 year ago very unjustly. As if they said they broke, while they're letting millions of illegals coming in across the Mexican border, they said that both of these two guys, I think, violated coming to an to one of their hearings on their green cards that they never even were informed of.
Right. Many people do not realize both Ernst Zundel and Gemar Rudolph were married to American citizens. Gemar Rudolph and his wife had a young daughter. The U.S. government intervened to make sure that Gemar Rudolph was arrested in Chicago, put on a plane, and sent off to Germany, where they knew, and it was already said, that he would be in prison for a sentence that was passed some years earlier.
And we got 6 minutes left, so this time flies by. Give us a few minutes on Rudolph and then a few minutes on Zundel. Why did they grab him in Chicago? Here's a scientist, formerly the Max Planck Institute, who did an forensic experiment about a decade and a half ago, I think. Why is Rudolph sitting in jail in Germany right now, a 38-year-old man who you can see pictures of at our website, thetruth247.com? Why is Rudolph in jail?
Gemar Rudolph's report, when he was a graduate student at a very prestigious scientific center in Germany as a chemist, and he's a certified chemist, he carried out a forensic, that is, on-the-spot physical examination of these so-called extermination gassing facilities at Auschwitz. In his report, he concluded that they could not and were not used for killing people as alleged. When the report came out in 1993, he was dismissed from his graduate program, and he was sentenced by a court. He was, but rather than serve the sentence, he fled. He went first to England, and then he came to the United States. He appealed for political asylum in this country on the basis that he was sentenced for an unjust law that doesn't exist, of course, in this country or in most countries. The U.S. government kept after him. He exhausted his various appeals, and then he was arrested in Chicago, in spite of the fact that he was living quietly here in this country. He would not broken any law, and was married to an American citizen, deported to Germany, where immediately, of course, he was put in jail. And in the next few weeks, his trial on new charges will begin in Germany. So it's a very, very dismal prospect for him. Now, that's Gemar Rudolph.
And unless Americans start to scream that we're not going to put up with this type of thing.
Well, Americans should protest this, because this is the thin wedge, you might say, or a portent of the restrictions on freedoms in our own country.
And actually, there's some gray laws passed already that someone like myself could be extradited out of this country, or yourself, and put on trial in Israel or Germany for some of the things we're saying on this program.
Right. Well, one of the bizarre features of these laws is that the state of Israel claims the right to punish anyone in the world who, as they put it, denies the Holocaust or disputes the Holocaust story anywhere in the world. Of course, this is preposterous and arrogant, but these kinds of restrictions are, of course, and these kinds of threats are very dangerous for all of us
around
the world.
And of course, if it wasn't for the backing up of our occupied United States government, everyone could laugh that one off from Israel.
Right. Now, in the case of Ernst Zundel, he has now been held for some 3 years in prison nearly a year in Germany and 2 years in Canada.
And Mark, let me say, I spent 6 hours with Ernst Zundel in 1999, I think, here at a Holiday Inn across the river with a few other people, and he listened to him talk. Here is a prince of a guy. So is Rudolph and Irving, but this guy is a chivalrous guy, a courageous guy, just the type of guy you'd want to be you'd want your grandkids to know or whatever. He just is a tremendous guy. Go ahead.
Right. Well, he's now been in prison for nearly 3 years without ever having been found guilty of any crime. This already is an outrage.
Yes.
He was held for 2 years in Canada in solitary confinement on the pretext that he is a so-called threat to national security, a charge so preposterous that even Canada's leading newspaper, the Toronto Globe and Mail, denounced this as an injustice.
He's a pacifist, isn't he?
He's a pacifist.
Yeah.
He's a staunch supporter of freedom of speech. The case he did fight against organized Jewish interests in Canada went all the way to the Supreme Court, and he was vindicated by the Supreme Court.
That was the late 80s, and I think you were there for part of that, weren't you?
I was a witness in the 1989 trial.
Yeah.
Yes, but anyway, these are very, very important developments. Yeah. Anyway, Zundel now has been held for, as I say, nearly 3 years without ever having been convicted of crime. His trial is still ongoing. It's been going on since, almost a year, or certainly most of the past year. And it's very likely, of course, that the government will impose a very stiff sentence against him and keep him in jail.
And he's 67 years old, and Irving is 67 or 68, and Rudolph is 38, right? Something like that?
No, I think Rudolph is now 42.
Okay. Now, the way we're getting this information out is the Internet. There's one group in the world, and I want to get this in, and maybe you can comment. There's one group in the world trying to shut down and license the Internet, and that's the Zionist Jewish lobby, the Anti-Defamation League. They've even had meetings, I believe. How can they shut down the Internet and stop people like you and me and Irving and Rudolph and a million other people, pro-life groups and everything else, from broadcasting on the Internet? Have you heard anything about that?
Well, Justin, hypocritical laws like this and campaigns like this thrive in the dark.
Yeah.
They wither under scrutiny and under light.
Yes.
And the Internet has been an important, very important tool in making many people around the world much more aware of the things that our government and other governments do, which are illegal or wrong or deceitful and so forth. And the Internet is a very, very powerful way of circumventing the kind of controlled media that we've been used to for so many years. There are all these efforts to try to clamp down on the Internet, especially with regard to defense of people like Ernst Zundel and so forth. But it's been a gratifying thing that in the last several months, there have been more and more voices speaking out against these laws. Just the other day, the Justice Minister of Switzerland publicly said that Switzerland should repeal its own so-called denial law. And he said Switzerland should be a model for other countries,
yes,
not an exception. A prominent British historian, Timothy Garton Ash, published a rather eloquent essay that appeared in the Los Angeles Times and in the Guardian newspaper in London, in which he likewise said that these bizarre laws should be repealed because as long as they stand in place, it's impossible to defend oneself against the obvious charge of a double standard, of hypocrisy, which is quite true.
Yes.
So these are encouraging developments, and the more people know about these laws, the more people know about the background and the consequences and the victimization that these laws bring, the better, and the more outraged, of course, more people are about them.
Right. Now, Mark, we have less than a minute left here. This time flies by. We could talk to you again for 3, 4, 5 hours and not get bored on this. But this is Mark Weber of the Institute for Historical Review. The website is ihr.org. And Mark often has essays that are short. Like, don't you have an essay on the 6 million number, I think, right?
Yes, I do, yes. There's a good essay, I think, on that particular subject, which I think lays out pretty irrefutably why the 6 million figure is an exaggeration. It's untrue. It's unfounded.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of excellent articles you have there. So I want to thank you so much for coming on and lending your expertise and your reasonable and well-documented approach on this subject. We wanted to speak up for Zundel and Irving and Rudolph. If I were sitting in jail and anywhere, I'd want somebody to speak up for me. And we also wanted to highlight this campaign against Internet freedom, that is freedom of speech and political matters, that is being conducted by these Zionist Jewish lobby organizations. They're trying to figure out how to shut down the Internet for free speech. So, Mark Weber, thank you so much for coming on, and we will talk to you again, okay?
Thank you very much, Jim, for your battle for freedom of speech as well.
Well, thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.